Hi everyone, it's John Shushani, the host of the June Founder Series. In our conversations, we're highlighting the people and stories behind the brands we love. Each founder is moving the needle in how we think about living happier, healthier, and overall better quality lives. Enjoy.
We're live with Marcelo Bonato, co-founder of Recoded. Marcelo, it's so nice to have you here today.
So nice to be here. I really appreciate the invite, John.
Thank you. So Marcelo, for those of you out there that don't know what Recoded is, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and what you're up to with the organization?
Absolutely. We are on a mission to empower untapped youth in communities around the world to build careers in technology. We believe that anyone, anywhere should have the opportunity to join and thrive in the digital economy. And we do that by working on the whole spectrum from education to employment. So we reskill, upskill youth in places like Iraq, Lebanon, Turkey, Yemen, and then we help them to find jobs in the technology sector and start a career as developers, UX, UI designers. So we started the organization, which is a nonprofit, in 2017, and it has been quite a journey since then.
Amazing. And I got really excited when you guys originally reached out to have June as a benefit at Recoded, which I thought was very one forward thinking for a nonprofit to offer competitive benefits. And then two, just the overall mission, its place in the future of work and upskilling and thinking about things like learning and development, social impact, as well as the tie-in to our company roots. June is a Farsi word, and our background, Persian background and culture, has really impacted the way that we think about our why and mission as well. So really excited and pumped to jump in. I'm really curious to dive a little bit deeper, Marcelo, into your background. How did you end up, I don't know exactly where you're from. I know you're in Lisbon, Portugal today. Are you German?
I'm originally from Brazil.
From Brazil? Yeah. Okay, I was totally off. How did you?
I do look German. I get German a lot.
I thought when I was listening to your TED Talk, I thought it mentioned something about Germany. How did you end up in the, doing this work in the Middle East, and what's your background? How did you get here?
Yeah, it was, I guess, by chance that I became a social entrepreneur, because I always wanted to work with education. Since I was a teenager, I understood how privileged I was to have the opportunities I had to go to school and then university. And it always made me think, why me, and why I was able to discover different universes and read books and meet people. And I sort of carry that with me during my career. And I had a point in my life that was really life-changing when I was in my last year of university in Brazil studying journalism. And I got a scholarship to go to Japan to study there for a year. And it completely changed my perspective, not only because it is a fascinating place, but I got to meet a lot of incredible people, do some work in Southeast Asia. And I came from that experience thinking, I want to have an international career. I want to see what is out there. I want to help people. And through education, I felt that I could give a little bit of that opportunity that I had growing up. And when I came back from Japan and graduated, I went to Egypt and I lived in Cairo for 2 years. And my plan was to work with refugees at that point. Egypt had a lot of Palestinians and Sudanese refugees. And I just wanted to find an opportunity to work with education for refugees. Little did I know that that is not always easy. So that didn't work out. I couldn't find a job in Egypt. Had an amazing time living there and meeting fantastic people. Egyptians are, so much fun to have as friends. but it didn't work out. I actually ended up working for an export-import company selling marble to Latin America, of all places. So after that, I went back home, worked a little bit for the Canadian government in Brazil for a few years until I realized that I needed that purpose back to my life. I needed to pursue that dream from, you know, by then, you know, 5-6 years ago. So I quit my job, went to New York City to do my master's at Columbia University with that intention of rescuing that dream of having an international career. So my goal was to work for a big nonprofit or the United Nations. And then, you know, fast forward, I ended up starting this company with my co-founder, and here we are, you know, 5 years in.
So you're at Columbia doing a graduate degree in what exactly?
In international affairs.
In international affairs. And did you meet your co-founder at Columbia?
That's an interesting story. I did not, because she was studying at New York University, but we were taking this class that was happening at the same time at NYU and Columbia. And we had two classes together during that semester, one at NYU and one at Columbia. So the first class at NYU, we didn't talk at all. And then the second class at Columbia, after the end of the class, it was, you know, 8 p.m. and the Columbia kids were just going for drinks. And she was the last NYU student just waiting for the elevator. And I was like, you know, we're going to grab a beer. Do you want to come? And she came and we spent the whole night just talking about the things that we wanted to do and how we wanted to work in the Middle East and how education was important for us. And that was the beginning. She went on to work on the idea for a couple of years. And then I came a little bit later when we started our pilot program in Iraq in 2016.
Super cool. So she started the business. How did the nonprofit, how did it evolve from what she had originally created to where Recoded is today? Like, what was the inception of the idea? And then also, like, how were you guys assessing and looking at just like you can look at it similarly as a startup or a business because it's an organization. Yeah. How did you assess the opportunity and sort of like the market and the environment that you were starting it in?
Yeah, it has changed so much since the inception. So when she went to Iraq for the first time in 2014, it was summer of 2014. It was the same day that ISIS took over Mosul, and she was just about 60 kilometers away. So she was able to witness firsthand a massive displacement of people, number one. And then how in that situation, opportunities in education and employment were so rare. And here you have a ticking bomb because you have a terrorist group just, you know, an hour away that is recruiting people and offering them money and guns and women. And you don't have any opportunities because the economy is going down. There's massive displacement of people. There was only for refugees and displaced populations, just one high school in Erbil, which is in the north of Iraq. So basically you're looking at a very high risk of radicalization for youth, or extreme unemployment and poverty, and for women also early marriage. So when she was there, she was looking at what the possibilities were, and she did a little bit of a survey with a lot of refugees, and she realized that the number one thing that they wanted was to learn more about computers, and the second thing was English. And with that idea, she went back to New York and worked a little bit more on the project, which by then was her master thesis. And she, at the same time, we were living a moment in New York where a lot of coding boot camps were starting to gain traction as an alternative to, you know, a university degree. So at that point, we were thinking, can we actually do that in the Middle East? Can we do that in a place like Iraq? It was, difficult to imagine how that would take place. So we played a little bit with the ideas and adapted a few things and decided to test it out in 2016 with a pilot program. You asked me, what assessment we've made at that point. So there are two things that were really important for us. Number one, the nonprofit sector is really stagnant and innovation is really hard to flourish. And we had worked before for the United Nations and government and other nonprofits. So we, from the get-go, we wanted, if we were to start an organization, we wanted it to be different. We want to do something that would then inspire other nonprofits to be different. And then the second thing is, education was not being revolutionized at that point, because education was, either you go to university or you finish your high school degree, but with opportunities to access that kind of education, specifically higher education, then you don't have any other entryway into the job market, especially jobs with a purpose that are highly paid. So we wanted to offer a one-of-a-kind education to employment model. And from the beginning, that was the idea. We did the pilot in 2016. We learned so much because a lot of our assumptions didn't hold right away. Just working in Iraq in the beginning, we were offering every wraparound support that you can imagine. We had two buses going around the city, picking up people to bring them to the training center and providing them lunch and snacks, in addition to a full day of coding, English, and other soft skills that we teach, 5 days per week. That was insane. So the model has evolved a lot. Today, we're completely online, partially because of the pandemic, but also because that's where we wanted to go anyways. But now we really put more emphasis on the quality of our education and connecting the dots between the education and the employment opportunities.
Amazing. And diving a little deeper into how you guys meet your students and in today's world, in today's environment, because you guys work between a couple different countries, is my understanding. Where are people learning about Recoded? What barriers do you have as it pertains to, the government sort of regulation in some of these places? Because it's not always, as I've seen or people see on the news, it's not necessarily the most stable or the most progressive. So how are you meeting the students? And then what kind of things do you have to work around as it pertains to the infrastructure and the systems in these countries, sort of going against what you're promoting, which is it's a form of financial freedom. It's a form of intellectual freedom. How do you get around that?
Yeah, we're now working in 4 countries, Iraq, Turkey, Yemen, and Lebanon. And our story is very linked to Iraq because that's where we started. And there are so many obstacles that we faced from the beginning. The first day of our pilot program in Iraq, our generator exploded because Iraq has a very unreliable power grid. So everyone runs on a generator. And we had this generator that completely exploded. You can see the security camera footage of fire coming out of it and people running out of the building. And so we started the program with 40 people at that time. All these 40 people with us in the room in the hottest day in Iraq. It was so hot that the government declared a holiday, and we had no electricity. No one could use their computers. And we were standing in front of them and telling them, hey, you're going to learn how to code and become a developer. So, thinking about that first moment, we've come a long way. But we went through political crisis, had to evacuate some of our personnel at points when things were getting a little bit unsafe in Iraq. But we were able to mitigate some of these problems over time by building the infrastructure for us to operate well in Iraq and Turkey and Yemen. And with the possibility of doing this remotely, we're now working in different countries without necessarily having a presence there. So in Lebanon, we're not registered as an organization, but we work with Lebanese youth by delivering the program completely online. And our team is very distributed. The way we find our students is through a lot of outreach through social media. It really depends on what country you're tapping into, because some countries are much more active on Facebook, some countries are more active on Instagram, but we do a lot of social media outreach. And then through our growing online community, we also have word of mouth. So they bring other friends who apply for the program. And by then we have built a very good reputation in the countries where we've been for a little bit longer. And we only accept around 5 to 6% of those who apply. So it ends up being quite competitive.
So many places. It's so fascinating what you guys are doing. How about on the funding side? Like, where do you guys get your funding from? Who's backing Recoded as a nonprofit?
We have a wide range of supporters. So our main funding comes from governments because, you know, usually they're more invested in the problems that you have in these regions. So there is funding coming from governments, but we also have funding from foundations and the corporate sector. And we really want to work a little bit more with the corporate sector because our mission is so much aligned with tech companies do and the mission of having more diversity in technology. So we've been exploring these partnerships a little bit, but we're still very much reliant on funding coming from governments. We have explored some revenue models in the past, just to become a little bit more independent. And we even started a for-profit organization to try to generate enough revenue for the nonprofit. And that was, you know, that is a story on its own. But right now we are trying to find this healthy balance between governments, foundations, and the corporate sector.
And a lot of aspiring entrepreneurs, activists, etc., you know, have this idea or this vision of creating change on a global level. You know, even me as you know, growing up, thinking about how can I do this, and I thought a lot about, you know, working with small family farms. You know, I came from the food industry, thinking about food as like a way that, you know, it connects us to different economies and groups of people and farmers around the world. And I as I've started this business, have been thinking more and more about how you can do it from a technology perspective. And it's why I got so excited when you guys reached out and I saw what you guys are doing. What kind of advice would you give, you know, now that you've lived through it, you've gone and got your master's degree, you've been doing this for a couple of years, for someone who's maybe coming straight out of college or entering college, who has this aspiration of creating change and impact on an international level?
You know, John, one thing when I look back, and this is not a regret, but when I look back, I passed on so many opportunities just because I was afraid of trying. I thought, you know, I was going to fail or I was not good enough. And I had all these ideas of how much I wanted to do and, you know, the impact that I wanted to have, but I was afraid to take that step forward and really try and fail if I had to. But, you know, starting something was not something easy for me. So that's why I'm very grateful for my co-founder, because she's the opposite. She was the one pushing us to go. And that was great, because then I felt a little bit safer to get all my ideas out there. My advice would be, don't be afraid to take the risk and try new things, because what is the worst that can possibly happen, which is failing, which is great, because you're going to learn so much from your mistakes and your failures. So don't be afraid of trying. And the other thing that I would say, especially for those who are thinking, you know, should I just try to do something and, you know, get a good job and get paid well, and all those things are really important. But I think that we're now living a moment more than ever that having that social vein, that desire to make a change and make people's lives better, that is critical. Whether you're doing this with refugees or education or climate change or in the middle of a pandemic, if you're going to start a business or find a job, think about that, because, you know, no matter how good your job is or how much it pays, there will come a moment where you will think, you know, what is my purpose, and am I doing something that really can have an impact in people's lives? And once you do that, then, you know, it's like you've been bitten by that mosquito and you don't want to go back, because the you know, the satisfaction of seeing, in our case, the growth of our students and how far they go. And I've met, you know, now hundreds of people who are so bright and so talented, and they just need the opportunity. They just need that little push, and everything else is not us, it's them. They are the ones taking ownership of their story and finding the jobs and starting companies. And now that we've been doing this for about 4 years, I see those who are in our first programs now working as AI experts for, you know, multinational companies, working remotely, starting their own companies, and hiring some of our newly graduates. It's just unbelievable what they can do. So my advice is, don't be afraid, take the risks, and think carefully when you're choosing your next career step, because having a social impact is something that, you know, it's really remarkable.
And in your story, thank you for sharing that. In your story, you had to live in Japan and even in Cairo and Egypt in order to kind of connect the dots. Do you think if someone is looking to create that impact, it's maybe almost a requirement to go in and immerse yourself in a foreign country in order to get more familiar and understanding of the problems? And then I guess the second part of the question, which I think you might have already touched upon, is if you weren't working at the intersection of like relearning or coding, now that you've been in these communities, at least in the Middle East, what else would you focus on from a nonprofit or a social impact sort of sector?
That's a great question, John. So let me answer the first one. If you want to have an international career, obviously having that experience of going abroad and you know, knowing a little bit more about the country and the people, it's obviously important. But I think having a curious mindset is what gets you there, even if you don't have the possibility of going abroad and, you know, having that experience. But also, there's so much that you can do in your communities. There are so many other issues that you can explore, and it's as rewarding as doing something abroad. If I were not doing what we do, I have, you know, life sometimes is too short. I have so many other ideas that I wanted to explore. So there are a few things that I'm very passionate about. One is homelessness. It's something for me that, you know, it breaks my heart. And I think it's a matter of human dignity that you have a roof above your head. It's so important. And someone who, or a family that does not have a place to live, or they don't know where they're going to sleep for the night, that for me is completely unacceptable. So I would work with trying to solve some of the homelessness problems that I've seen in places like the US or in my own country, Brazil. I'm also very passionate about animals, specifically sharks. So if I could work with conservation of sharks, such a misunderstood animal, but fascinating, I would. But at the end of the day, my passion is with education. And I think that's where I will focus, specifically in that intersection of education and employment. So right now, I'm just thinking, how can we multiply our impact, how we can do things more innovative, how can we really leave a legacy and you know, be a role model for other organizations. And we're thinking of products we can develop that will help other educators and learners to be more effective in a time when most of the learning is happening online.
One, I want to understand what got you interested in sharks. Like, where did that come from? Are you a surfer? And you said misunderstood animal. What should more people know about sharks? And then I have some questions around the, you know, your ultimate mission and purpose, which is around the education stuff that maybe we can help with too.
Yeah, it's hard to pin down when I became obsessed with sharks. I don't know if it was Jaws or just, you know, browsing through books with plenty of photos and animals, but I find it a fascinating animal because it's one that we fear, and it is frightening to be in the ocean, because, you know, the ocean by itself, it's frightening even if you're a good swimmer. But imagine a predator just, you know, lurking and on the water, and it's frightening. But I think if you look at the evolution of sharks and how they have evolved so little over hundreds of years, which means that they have this perfection about them and the way that their biology is works. And there is also a degree of mystery about sharks, because we know very little about them. Number one, they don't have bones. So all you find when a shark dies is their teeth. So there is little that scientists and experts can work with. I guess I just like the idea of knowing more about such a fascinating animal. And they are misunderstood, because obviously we're afraid of sharks and we think, like, you know, a good shark is a dead shark. And that is not true for many reasons. Number one, you know, at the top of the chain, they're critical for the underwater ecosystem. But also, we have to understand that, yes, I don't want to be, you know, lose my arm because of a shark attack, but it's their environment, and we just need to be aware of that and be more careful. And needless to say that we kill more sharks than they kill us. So, you know, we just need to pay attention to the numbers sometimes.
Do you spend a lot of time in the ocean too?
I'm trying to bring that back to my life a little bit more. Before, I'm now based in Portugal. Before that, I was living in Istanbul for 3 years, and I did not have a lot of access to, you know, even though the Bosphorus is right at your doorstep and it's, you know, amazing and magical, I did not have a lot of opportunities to be in the water all the time, traveling a lot for business at that point. And now that I'm here in Lisbon and Portugal, it's a fantastic country with beautiful coast. We have lockdowns, so it's been a little bit difficult to be in the water, but that is one of my number one priorities, hopefully this summer, to go back and swim a little bit more. And I used to surf when I was very young, and I haven't done it for about two decades now. So it's my goal for 2021, John.
Yeah, and I've heard our head of development or technology, Ivo, is out in Lisbon and has told us it's not the prettiest. So sending my best to you guys out there. Curious to dive a little bit deeper into you, Marcelo. I'm always fascinated by founders, leaders, own mental models, and what you do, you know, in order to enhance your focus and productivity, what you do in order to enhance your well-being. I told you I was watching your TED Talk from a couple of years ago, and I was like, wow, like he's shredded. So I'm curious, one, to think about, are there any takeaways, systems that you've applied to your work in order to stay focused and stay productive and make sure that you're accomplishing everything that you guys want to as an organization, that maybe other people can take away or learn from?
Yeah, I've been reflecting on this for so long now, because I, you know, being a founder, as you know, is such a challenging job, because you have to wear so many hats and you carry that responsibility of making sure that the organization not only does not fail, but also grows, and so many people depend on you, not only your employees, but also the people you work with, the people you serve. And my biggest fear was not being good enough, as I said. So thinking, what am I lacking? What do I need to improve on? And at points it was quite paralyzing, and I started to understand that, you know, I wouldn't be able to show up as the leader that I wanted to be if I did not work this out. And for a couple of years now, I've been experimenting with a couple of things. One is meditation, just being much more present. I started doing this in 2019, and I still haven't mastered completely, and I think it takes ages for you to do it, but it has helped me just to deal with some of the anxiety that comes with the job, anxiety that comes with life, and focus more. So I start my day with a little bit of a mix of a yoga and stretch followed by meditation, and then I save some time just for reading. So that happens before I start even looking at my emails at 8:30. I make sure that I go through that ritual every morning, because that really sets up my day for success. I have also changed a lot how I manage my schedule. I used to be very reactive and, you know, letting people just book stuff, and I would be checking my emails all the time. And obviously it was not very healthy for me. And I try to do just one little trick. I'm a very visual person. So I use Google Calendar in a very, colorful way, just to make sure that I know what I need to do. And everything is very organized in blocks and by the dot. And since I started doing this, I have been able to, you know, focus so much more on the tasks that I have in my hands. And one important thing that I've realized as a founder and where the organization is today is, once you start the company, as you know, you're responsible for doing everything, even the nitty-gritty. And I did that for about 2 or 3 years. And I realized, I guess, much too late, that I needed to make that transition, hire more people who know much more than I do, and delegate that to them so that I could focus on the strategy and the creativity and the higher level decision-making that the organization needs. Now I'm right at that moment when we're bringing a lot of people, and I'm finally able to step back a little bit more and focus on where I can really add value. In addition to that, incorporating in my day things like exercising, running, which is something that I love. I've been, right now, I'm much less radical when it comes to exercising. It has been part of my life since I was a kid. I started playing judo and then football, and then just working out and running. But today I'm very easygoing, and I do my runs and I do my yoga, and that makes me happy. But working on my mental health has been very important for me, because 2020 was the most difficult year of my life, not only because of what happened to all of us, but I also lost my mom in April last year. And it was, you know, just a devastating moment for me, because you suddenly, you're completely disoriented when you lose someone that you love. And I had never experienced that before. And dealing with the grief at the same time that the world was going through a pandemic was, you know, very difficult. And she was in Brazil, and my family was in Brazil, and I was in Turkey, and I couldn't be there. And not being there in such a pivotal moment in your life is something that you never forget. So it was sometimes really hitting rock bottom, and I thought about quitting multiple times, but I'm lucky that I have a co-founder that is also my wife, and she kept me, she kept me pushing and pushing, and it's like, you know, we can do this together. And imagine that she was going through the same thing, you know, it's her mother-in-law. And but we were now coming out the other end, and the organization has never been stronger, the mission has never been more exciting. But it was a year of pain, but a year of finding ways to deal with, you know, your mental health and being more present and understanding that, you know, that grief that comes with losing someone is something that I had to try to find a way to deal with, right?
Wow. Thank you for sharing that, Marcelo. And I've just to kind of reflect back, you know, from the first meeting we had, it seems like you're so mission driven, and I think in some ways I could relate to just you, it sounds like you were given so much in life that doing something that was bigger than yourself has always been the North Star, but that in the last year, you've also had to realize that you have to find ways to refill your cup, keep yourself focused and motivated, and take care of yourself in order to then be able to continue to like come back to your business and to give back. And that's really cool that you have your wife as your partner. I look forward to meeting her and having her on. What's her name?
Her name is Alexandra, but you know, she's Australian. So we, in Australia, they shorten everything. So we call her Ali, which is sometimes a little bit weird in the Middle East, because Ali is also the name of an Arab male. And she come, you know, when people don't know who is joining the meeting, they're just expecting a man. But yeah, no, she's wonderful. And we started this together as a married couple, and I don't think we could have done it any other way. It makes us stronger, makes the partnership stronger, the organization stronger. And you know, she is the person pushing me forward in these difficult moments.
So cool. We're wrapping up on time, Marcelo. Two questions I had for you is, and maybe they tie in together. One, what are you most excited about as you think about the future of work and reskilling and sort of your space, nonprofit stuff in the Middle East? And then the second part of that is, I guess it's sort of like a, I don't know, question, but you know, we sell into HR, we sell into people ops. Those are oftentimes the people that are making the decision on something like June. And I see a real clear marriage in terms of if any of those organizations are looking to expand their talent pool and their workforce and create a little bit more of a diverse environment, folks that are coming through your program or alumni of your program are great candidates. So I also see an opportunity there where if there's a place where people that are listening can go and find people that have gone through Recoded, it could be an interesting sort of collaboration or partnership that we can also take offline and talk about more further. I'll stop there and see kind of what you have.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is one message that I can leave for your community. If you're thinking about having more diversity and you're looking for developers, designers, drop us a line, because we want to have more partnerships with the corporate sector. And you will be working with some amazing people that will give everything they have. They're the most intelligent, most driven, resilient folks that I've met in these past 4 years. And it's just a bless and a privilege to be working with them. We cannot be more excited about where the organization is going, because we see that what we have done in the past 4 years and getting that proof of concept that our education to employment model works. We have now trained hundreds of people, and we have high retention rates, usually over 90%. and the go-to job is about 85 to 90% within 3 to 6 months of graduation. So the results have been amazing. But now what we're trying to do is, how can we keep the same quality that we have in our programs and the same idea that we had since the beginning, which is, you know, one of our values is care deeply. And we, that means that we believe in people's potential, and we see the whole human being, and that's how we treat them during the program. And that for them is a revelation, because they get to know more about themselves, they increase their levels of confidence, and the results have been incredible. And now we want to make sure that we can scale that up to more people in other places with the same quality. Our education team is just working tirelessly to understand what that looks like. We want to work with not only with the communities that we work with in the Middle East, but with young people in Latin America, in the US, in parts of Europe, in Asia, especially now that we can do that online, that gives us that possibility of bringing our educational model to more people. And the second thing that is really exciting at the moment is how we are building the organization as a distributed, anti-fragile organization that will withstand the tests of time. So we're working on multiple fronts, on different people processes, finance processes, bringing more software on board, because we want to show other nonprofits that you can, yes, be innovative, that you can take things like management, company culture very seriously, and let that creativity flow, because it's not really common in the nonprofit sector. So we're very excited to see where the organization will be in a couple of years, and hope that we are still strong in delivering our mission.
Thank you, Marcelo. This has been awesome. It's been such a pleasure learning more about your story and more about Recoded and sort of like the ins and outs and where you see other opportunities for other, you know, social entrepreneurs or people that want to create impact. And also its tie into the future of work has been really fascinating. So thank you so much for coming on. I look forward to meeting Ali, not Ali, and have a great rest of your day.
Thank you so much. I really enjoyed this conversation.
Likewise.